Welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to the Friday Morning Show with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, where we always talk about A Course in Miracles. And today, I think we're going to go into some really interesting topics. That's my feeling. As an astrologer, I see that Mercury, the planet of thinking, is also in alignment with Neptune. And Neptune is that planet of illusions and dreams and, in some ways, fantasies, creativity, imagination. And my guest today, and by the way, if you're listening live, this is October 19th, 2018. And my guest today is ACIM teacher Bruce Rawls. He's also a web designer and just, he's a fascinating character. He's an author of books and knows all this stuff, what I would say stuff about physics and quantum computing and all of these words that, but through my education, I don't know. I mean, I understand some of the concepts when they're explained to me, but it's certainly not my background. And he had suggested this morning that we look at some ideas that are suggested by the Course in Miracles text, chapter 16, which is the forgiveness of illusions, and specifically section 5, the bridge to the real world. But that is actually related in his mind to some other things that he had sent me that were all about quantum computing. And basically, you know, the message is we're all one. And even through our science, even through a lot of the things that we're doing, I mean, we can say that spiritually. We can say that, you know, in our metaphysical circles, we're all one. But it's true also that in our science, in our quantum computing, they're demonstrating that if you program, and of course, even that word that they were using, qubits or something, you know, if you program them, they can be literally across the universe and they will still communicate and still understand. You make a change in one, you make a change in the other, which, of course, is why Bruce had brought that idea into the conversation. So in any case, I do feel, though, with Mercury lining up with Neptune, this could be a far out discussion and hopefully a really creative and imaginative discussion this morning. So thank you, everybody who has joined us or everybody who will listen to this in the future. And while you're listening live, so if you're here on Friday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific, then we're also live over on Facebook in our chat room. And if you would like to join us there, you can go to our radio website, which is 12radio.com, click on the chat button, and you'll be redirected to that private group where you can join us and, you know, post your pictures, make comments, talk about your quibbits or whatever they are. So in any case, but we are going to at least use the text as a jumping off point. And like I said, that is chapter 16, the forgiveness of illusions, and specifically section 6, the bridge to the real world. So welcome, Bruce, and thank you so much for the topic.
Oh, thanks, C.A. And as always, for just being able to share with you on your show, I always enjoy this a lot. and it reminds me that I, you know, as we've talked about before, that you know, we share these ideas, we strengthen them. I can say that phrase.
Yes.
In our own minds, because, you know, it's really, and I think that ties perfectly into the idea in A Course in Miracles that is what you give, you have in truth. Because it's always and only about the mind, at least that curriculum is. And so when you give something in mind, and like what happens when you do that in form in the dream world, of seeming time and space, you strengthen what you give away. And that's why I enjoy this. And I mentioned that's a similar rationale and motivation for you too. So,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And of course, I really do think oftentimes I say this, that I want to, at least in my own life, get beyond the place where I feel like I'm just, you know, paying, you know, I'm just saying something. I'm just mouthing the words, but it doesn't correlate. It doesn't resonate. It doesn't literally have that physical change in my body or in my consciousness. So I love it actually when we see that the things that, you know, 'cause here again, even in this chapter, the real world versus the not real world, mm-hmm. or what so often I find myself saying, well, in real life or in real time. And it's like, what does that even mean? Well, and ironically, after studying A Course in Miracles, I don't believe that that is the real world.
Mm-hmm.
But with communication, it's only as good as if somebody understands what you're talking about.
Exactly.
You know, there's no point in my using a bunch of language or in my saying things that I know for a fact nobody's following me, that they're not using the word the same way I am. So, you know, that's why this whole concept is interesting. And like I said, astrologically, looking at Mercury in alignment with Neptune, I'm going, oh my God, you know, but this is an opportunity then to explore some of those things and maybe make him, you know, understandable. So one thing I would like to kind of start with is just to kind of tell the audience about the link that you sent me and what you think it's saying and why you think it applies to this conversation.
Sure. Well, you summarized it very nicely. The link is something that a mutual friend, I'm not sure if you've met Dave, actually. But anyway, Dave Van Dyke is a friend of mine who I've known since seventh grade, lives in Pueblo, Colorado. Anyway, he's also an avid course student and a brilliant 3D animator and just a renaissance guy all around and a lifetime buddy of mine. Anyway, he and I talk frequently. He also did an animation that's going to become part of the new FIP website of the book opening and really beautifully done. Anyway, Dave sent me this link. It's been 2 or 3 weeks ago now, and it's just really kind of stuck with me. This one point in this very technical presentation by a lady from Microsoft, I think her name is Krista Svore, S-V-O-R-E, and about 16 minutes and a half minutes into this video, which is only like a 25 minute video, a lot of technical details, you know, way over my head and probably most of the listeners, I'm guessing. I don't know. There may be a lot of, you know, quantum physicists listening right now. But Microsoft, along with other researchers, are busily, you know, pioneering the next frontier not only computing, but also, which I think is kind of underappreciated, unless you really kind of connect the dots, and it's all about the connection, is in communication. And the idea being that, the little light bulb moment for me went on, about 16 and a half minutes into this video where, she says, and I quoted this in the email I sent you, it says teleportation, which is actually, the phrase, the programming command, the programming language that they use. Like if you've ever done any programming, you know that there's commands and basically functions and things that you can ask a computer to do, and then they have labels that we can, you know, relate to so that we know what they do. Well,
right.
the label they assign to this one task of synchronizing these two quantum bits, or qubits for short, was called teleport. And I thought, if that isn't straight out of Star Trek, I don't know what is.
I know. I see. I thought so too. I thought, really? Are they talking teleportation?
Well, it might as well be in terms of the ideas, because the data that is stored in these qubits, which again is not a digital kind of thing. It's more like analog, as I understand it. But my understanding is very fuzzy and hazy. Speaking of Neptune, but there is data associated with each of these qubits, and that data is what's really amazing with this quantum technology is that it's extremely fast. I mean, it makes the fastest computers we have today look like, you know, snails heavily sedated. You know,
right.
I mean, it's just blisteringly fast. But what's even faster, in fact, it goes beyond fast because it's really instantaneous, simultaneous, is that when they issue this teleport command, when they've got these two qubits, basically, you know, connected through the software that they're programming these prototypes, when they tell these two qubits to teleport. That's the command that says, okay, now you're going to be synchronized in your data, if I understand this correctly. And I believe, you know, that was what they were trying to convey, is that from then on, the data in those two bits, if you will, of data is synchronized, so that if the data changes in one, the data in the other one that's linked to it is synchronized and instantaneously changes, not at the, you know, a million miles an hour or the speed of light or 100 times the speed of light. It's instantaneous, simultaneous, and basically means that for all intents and purposes, time and space are irrelevant to those two devices. Well, it doesn't take too much. Well, maybe it does, but in my mind, anyway, the extrapolation from the physics to the metaphysics is that, okay, if that's true, then the things that appear to separate us, time, space, individuality, and certainly, as A Course in Miracles would say, the whole realm of the thought system of the ego, which reinforces that, the sin, guilt, fear, death, denial paradigm, those, and I just use G for gist, for guilt, to make my, complete my acronym that I find really handy, is guilt, individuality, space, and time as sort of the triggers for anything that isn't real in the sense of eternal or unchanging, which kind of ties into today's workbook lesson, mm-hmm. That anything that is eternal truly is connected to everything else that's eternal. Now, we're just now in our science getting, you know, practical, viable, appliable, if that's a word, you know, technology that makes use of that. We've known about quantum entanglement for decades, and that was one of the things that just kind of like, you know, totally freaked out all the physicists in Copenhagen decades ago when quantum mechanics and quantum theory and modern physics was being birthed, you know, back in the middle of the last century. And Einstein himself, Albert Einstein himself, even called quantum entanglement spooky action at a distance. Because you know, according to his theories, nothing could go faster than the speed of light. Well, then there was tachyons that they were found that, you know, go faster than the speed of light. But now this is now, because it's like there's zero speed. I mean, there's it takes zero time for these two quantum bits to maintain the same information. So not only is the data that can be computed amazingly fast, but you know, staggering beyond what we can imagine practically, but the implication of the communication, even on a pragmatic level, is staggering. I you know, just for one example, if you're, you know, in my nerd space, if you're familiar with blockchain technology that makes things like Bitcoin possible. You know, one of the limitations of that is it has to propagate through all these things all over the planet, and then, you know, come together and say, oh yeah, this is a legitimate transaction kind of thing. Well, what if you do that with qubits? And it's like, done.
Yeah.
I mean, so I mean, that's just one example of the things that you know, what we think of as a pragmatic level, which you know, it makes this whole thing staggering. But to me, the real value is the metaphysical implications, is that now we have science going even further to confirm what mystics have been saying for millennia, and A Course in Miracles has been saying for decades, in particular, that reality, the real world, has nothing to do with anything that can change. So the fact that we're using technology that seems to change to demonstrate an unchanging connectedness, which is a reflection of an unchanging oneness that we all are, have, and share, I think speaks volumes. In fact, it goes beyond volumes and beyond space and time to that spirit that we really are, doesn't it? And so I think this is an example of a bridge. You know, and we can use anything that can be a bridge. I mean, recently I watched a video about Mr. Rogers, and documentary in his life, and how he talks about how he can't support anything that is demeaning to anyone, because, you know, the implication being that what we really are is beyond condemnation. The truth of us is infinitely innocent and completely untainted by anything that could possibly have happened in space and time. Well, there's another example. I mean, right. I'm sure we could come up with dozens just in the next few seconds if we thought about all the things that have been inspiring to us. Another example, I'll use one that's related to A Course in Miracles. I just finished reading an advanced copy of Jackie Laura Jones' new book. Let's see if I can remember the title. I put it on ACIM blog, so I'm gonna look it up there. But it's basically a really excellent book that reminds us that we're all the same thing. Let me find it here real quick. It has the word pieces in the title. It's coming up right now. Okay, anyway, it just came out, but I highly recommend it. It's basically a wonderful book for people who want to just dive right in. Here it is. It's called All Peace, No Pieces.
Oh, I like that title.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very well written. It's very engaging and uncompromising and just dives right in, but it's a very accessible read. So anyway, if you go to ACM blog and look on the sidebar, you can see a link to that book.
I'll post that in the chat room at least by the end of the show.
Highly recommend that book, yes, for serious students of the course and for newbies who might want to just dive right in and find out what it's all about and really get into it. The bridge to the real world. I mean, that's really what we're doing all the time when we make these connections and recognize that a connection is just a reflection of the oneness. The sameness is a mirror of the oneness that we all are, have, and share. And so anything that relates to the kind of forgiveness, and to use Gary Renard's term, quantum forgiveness, which is really seeing that nothing happened in truth, in reality, beyond the space-time illusion that could have changed our perfect innocence, then if we can remember that kind of forgiveness lets ourselves off the hook as it lets everyone else off the hook, simultaneously, instantaneously. It's a quantum thing.
Right.
So should we read a little of that section in chapter 16?
Yes, although actually before we do, there's one thing I want to say. And this is this because of what we're talking about, I don't know if I can make this if I can be articulate, let's put it that way. But what I'm sitting here thinking that is so – it's just like human nature and it's so funny is that if you think of it from a perspective, sometimes I look at some incredible things. Like I look at incredible artwork and I look at this idea of quantum physics and, oh, my God, look at how the universe works. This is like phenomenal. Then when I put it back in terms of this is our dream, we created it, then I start thinking, oh, my God, we are such incredible minds that we would even think this stuff up. But here's the thing. We think this stuff up because it is a reflection of who we are.
Right.
And but then instead of then kind of looking at that and going, oh, it's not like we're original thinkers here. We're just like projecting onto the screen what was already inside. But then we get all like, oh, my God, isn't this incredible? Isn't this awesome? And, I mean, it's almost like taking secondary evidence instead of, you know, almost like the idea of the prisoners sitting in the cave.
Yeah.
In the Plato idea? Uh-huh. And if I write something in the shadows and I it's like I'm learning something from the shadows that I'm all like a flutter about instead of just looking at the reality, the light. You know, it's like, why do I have to see it in the shadow first? But I know the reason, because that's what we do. We believe the shadow. But then when the shadow becomes incredible, we don't go, boy, that was kind of stupid. Why didn't I just go to the source in the first place? That's kind of what I'm thinking is all of a sudden We know in our hearts that once I forgive or once I make a choice and I make a decision, that literally does go throughout the entire universe.
Right.
The speed of light, at the speed of whatever we're talking about. The minute I make that choice, the minute I make that decision, and yet I have to get all excited because some scientist proved that one qubit could talk to another qubit. You know? But I guess there again, human, I mean, in some ways in the material form, we're so dense and so We keep looking at reflections of ourselves and getting all excited, and eventually we'll just realize we don't need the reflection anymore.
Exactly. And you're bringing up great analogies and excellent points and stating it very eloquently, and I appreciate that you did that, because that really is something that probably, you know, might have been, you know, overlooked in the remarks I was making a moment ago about how the importance – really, as you know, restated very nicely, it is not in the physics, but in the metaphysics, which is
right.
to say, you know, going beyond the evidence and learning to generalize and realizing, okay, if this cool thing in physics has any value at all, it's that it reminds me that that choice is in my mind 24/7, 365, and I can choose the thought system that reflects reality. By forgiving myself for the things that I think are my transgressions against perfect oneness, and the things that I think other people and other critters on the planet and the environment and you know the planet of the planet itself and beyond. If I can forgive that whole, you know, what of course Miracle suggests is fictitious cosmology. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can forgive this Bruce a fiction character, which I sometimes call myself jokingly, which it actually is kind of fun. Then I can forgive the fictitious things associated with that character and everyone else that seems to have interacted with this dream figure, and realize that, you know, nothing has changed our real nature. And because of that, can we legitimately afford to forgive, and then, as you say, we're not looking at the shadows on the back of the cave wall while we're chained, you know, seemingly apart, staring at dim and obscure flickering shadows. We realize, wait a minute, there's a light source here, and if I, you know, turn around and notice that the shackles have been, you know, unlocked for millennia, I could actually
right.
just get up and walk out of the darn cave. and that's the whole point, is that, yeah, to you know, slowly but surely, you know, at our own rate, we all, you know, make the decision to return to the light that we never left, and see that, you know, we've all been able to let go of our grievances and our victimhoods and our resistance to the truth that really has just been a misunderstanding. It's just been as Ken Wapnick says, it's not and I keep going back to this phrase because I think it's so important. It's not evil, wicked, or sinful. It's just silly that, you know, we've been laying there in open manacles, you know, thinking that we've been chained to stare at the, you know, the far darkened end of a cave and content ourselves with just a few little flickering shadows and trying to make meaning from that, which is really kind of what we're doing, even with the coolest things in modern physics and the coolest stuff in technology and communications and you know, culture in the world and all the things that across the screens of our mind, literally and figuratively, in digitally or quantumly, and you know, as the technology it progresses, it's just a reflection at best. No matter how, you know, sophisticated that becomes, the real bridge is in the mind, and I think that's why A Course in Miracles is such a brilliant document, because it leads us back to, inexorably, back to that decision point in the mind where we truly make a difference. To go beyond all differences, go beyond duality.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you know, here's another example, because I guess for me, it needs to be very concrete, but mm-hmm. then I can apply it spiritually.
Yes, exactly.
Here's one more idea that has just, in a sense, been kind of blowing my mind, and that is, you know, that I use a Fitbit, which is an activity tracker.
Uh-huh.
And so you wear this, you can put it, you know, on your wrist, you can carry it in your pocket, whatever, and it literally measures, you know, how many steps you take. It can measure your heart rate and things like that. Uh-huh. But it does connect to an app on my phone. Uh-huh. So as long as I have the phone saying sync, you know, sync automatically or sync continuously, you know, almost at any point I can turn on that app. and it'll tell me how many, you know, steps I've taken. But recently I'd been wearing this for a long, long time, and, you know, they've made better ones, basically. Uh-huh. And I thought, you know, I've gotten so dependent on this. I mean, it's such a good, you know, it's kind of rigid of me, but it just keeps me on track every day. So I thought, you know what, I saw one on sale and I thought, I'm going to get the new one. So I got a newer one, but as it turns out, the newer one is easier to wear, but it is bigger. And so there are situations where I want one or the other. And so what I basically had decided to do is that I was going to keep both of them charged up. And at any given time, I would have at least one of them either on me or in my pocket or whatever. But it's amazing to me that all three now talk to each other, because the two Fitbits and the phone all talk to each other. Uh-huh. And so I can pick up one Fitbit, I can take off one Fitbit and pick up the other one, and literally within about a minute, it readjusts to whatever the other one was talking, you know, what the information the other one had. And see, I somehow didn't expect that. It was like, I expected that there could be a problem with the coordination, because one Fitbit that's been laying on the table all day, how does it know what the other Fitbit's been doing? But it does, you know. I mean, but once
all minds are joined.
Yes, and that, but that's the spiritual connection of it too.
Right,
the
right.
only way it can do that is because it's connecting to the cloud or the source or whatever. Because in fact, every once in a while, when I'll open the phone, it'll say, you know, to really sync or do any connection, you've got to reconnect to the source. This is not connected to the internet. And so, you know, it's that constant reminder that, yes, all things really are joined, or at least this is, once again, it's one of those physical demonstrations that in some ways kind of blows my mind, but we can extrapolate to the spiritual. When we are connected, you know, when we're connected to our source, then it is like all the one mind really does talk. The one mind really is the one mind.
It really is. I mean, there's just one thing, isn't it?
But for me, it takes a Fitbit to kind of go, wow, look at how this could work.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, that's kind of, you know, the whole purpose of bringing this up is it's a trigger to the mind, to the decision-making faculty of the mind, more specifically, that allows us to look at the silliness of the world of specifics that we made up, and then choose against the imprisonment of that.
Right.
That is needless. Yeah.
Yeah. Which kind of brings me to another point that I think about the Fitbit that I think is a spiritual reality. And that is that every once in a while I find myself without the Fitbit, and then I go, oh, darn, now I'm not getting credit. You know, I'm not getting credit for all of these things I've been doing, you know, the mile that I walked. And I say, CA, the credit, the real indication here is in your body. It's your body that you're trying to influence, not the Fitbit. And so your body had no problem at all tracking that you walked a mile. But right. I forget. And you know, it's that substitution factor.
Oh, this world is a substitution. And that's
yes,
that you bring up another important point.
Yes, it's exactly. All a substitution. And
yeah.
It's like you're not trying to make the Fitbit happy. You're trying to, you know, be healthier. You're trying, you know, this is a health and wellness thing. And so even if the Fitbit isn't giving you credit, your body did. So anyway, it's a laugh. It's funny all the time.
It is. And another humorous metaphor that comes to mind is the classic cliche of you know, people who worship the finger rather than what it's pointing to, you know, they
yes.
see the statue and
right.
you know, they're supposed to symbolize, you know, look to the heavens or something, you know, whatever. And so the, you know, you have this whole cult that evolves around people worshiping the finger because that's all they can, you know, see, cause they don't see where it's pointing to. And that's kind of, you know, our, in a sense, not our predicament, but our predisposition to, because we're so enamored with form and we're so, you know, immersed in this world that we made up and think it's the real deal, that, you know, we say, you know, we're sort of like Happy Truman Show denizens, you know?
Right.
You know, we kind of think, well, yeah, as long as everything seems to be going on okay, you know, why would I want to, you know, have anything more than this little Whoville existence?
Right.
And yet, you know, A Course in Miracles keeps pointing out, says, well, if you really are honest with yourselves, you'd probably, you know, like lesson 182, you'd probably notice that, you know, you're actually kind of miserable when you listen to the ego and you know, are informed by its insanity about your identity. It's like, well, yeah, okay, you got a point there. And when,
right.
the more we, you know, admit that to ourselves and be happily wrong, as the Course puts it, the more we realize that we really would rather be happy than right, you know?
Right.
Right in terms of the ego's, you know, justification for condemning and victimization and all that stuff, you know? It's a really highly qualified and suspect right with big quotes around it, right?
Right. So,
right.
So now I think we really can read this, but I think what I'm keeping in my own mind is, you know, the bridge to the real world is really looking at all these substitutions that we make.
Yes.
You know, that's what the bridge is. And we're going back and forth on this bridge all the time.
We are. And what's cool about it and all the things we've been bringing up, you know, each one of them, everything that that triggers us as a mnemonic device in the world to help us generalize becomes then an opportunity for us to say, oh, I can take what seems to be happening and use that to get back to my mind. It's sort of like Byron Katie, you know, turn it around. Her, you know, mantra, and which is wonderful because it basically says, I can use anything and everything as an opportunity to, you know, jostle my mind out of its slumber and back to the awareness that I can choose peace instead of ego's interpretation or misinterpretation of everything. So, and that's
right.
The bridge.
So we can repurpose every single thing.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep.
Yep. Okay, you want to start reading?
Sure. I think what I'm going to do is jump to paragraph 5 in section 6 of chapter 16 in the text of A Course in Miracles. And it basically says, you see the world you value. And there again, it's the choice of which teacher, which of two thought systems. And it's always one or the other. On this side of the bridge, you see the world of separate bodies. Separate qubits that don't seem to be in communication, seeking to join each other in separate unions and to become one by losing. That's another interesting idea. So basically,
right.
You know, it's usually there's some kind of compromise involved in joining on the level of form. There's something that dies for something to be born, you know, and there's always this duality, this dichotomy, this splitting that happens by what appears to be joining. Anyway, so when two individuals seek to become one, they are trying to decrease their magnitude. Each would deny his power, for the separate union excludes the universe. Far more is left outside than would be taken in, for God is left without and nothing taken in. Basically saying, you know, no matter how many times you add up illusion, you know, an infinity times nothing is still nothing.
It's still nothing. Exactly.
If one such union were made in perfect faith, the universe would enter into it. And here that now in this context, the universe, you know, Jesus is basically saying this is the real universe now in this context. But we, you know, we don't usually make those true unions in the mind in perfect faith because we have a tainted opinion of ourselves and everyone else. There's always some qualifying judgment or, you know, nagging, condemnation of some sort that if we kind of look at our thoughts honestly, and that's what, this very challenging yet fulfilling curriculum asks us to look at. So I'll go on. It says, yet the special relationship the ego seeks does not include even one whole individual. There it is. The ego wants but part of him and sees only this part and nothing else. And I'm reminded of the brilliant workbook or, you know, kind of exercise, I should say, in Gary Renard's Fearless Love audio that stuck with me over the years, which is instead of looking at a person and saying, you know, this is spirit, the idea is to practice recognizing I'm looking at all of spirit. I'm not looking at a part of, because it's the partiality that makes of an unhappy party and parts company that has never been parted in truth. So all puns intended there. Okay, so let me read that again. Yet the special relationship the ego seeks does not include even one whole individual. The ego wants but part of him and sees only this part and nothing else. So there again, you know, the bridge is basically bridging our predisposition to interpret what our sensory data take in as saying, oh, well, this is just part of truth, part of reality, part of oneness, part of spirit. And instead, if we recognize that each, whether it's, you know, the cat on your lap or the person, you know, driving past you or a family member or a politician on TV or a pundit or a, you know, celebrity or you know, just any seemingly random person or thing, every single seeming individual is all of spirit. And that's, again, the pervasive illusion of space and time that makes it seem, you know, holographically, convincingly real. And we've got this, you know, our technology keeps expanding to reinforce from the ego's perspective how magnificent this dream is. And see, we got to buy into the dream. But patiently and quietly, our inner kindness teacher keeps saying, not so fast. Maybe, yeah, maybe each seeming part really has all of spirit. Each seeming part is really the whole enchilada disguised as a part of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to read on?
Sure. So this is paragraph 6. Uh-huh. Across the bridge, it is so different. For a time, the body is still seen, but not exclusively as it is seen here. The little spark that holds the great rays within it is also visible, and this spark cannot be limited long to littleness. Once you have crossed the bridge, the value of the body is so diminished in your sight that you will see no need at all to magnify it, for you will realize that the only value the body has is to enable you to bring your brothers to the bridge with you and to be released together there.
Hmm. Exactly. Well, sounds like forgiveness practice to me, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you know, it goes back to actually what you were talking about, the Mr. Rogers, uh-huh. And you had mentioned that before, that show, and I haven't seen it. It's on Netflix, right?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah, I called it up one night, but I was just so tired. I knew I couldn't stay with it. But in any case, that idea that in some ways there are so few absolutes in life that work. You know, I mean, we'd like to think there are. We're always talking about the spiritual laws. I mean, in the metaphysics world, you know, they tend to do that. And yet most of those, they're not rules or laws at all. And yet I think about a person who kind of sets as his goal to not participate in any belief system or in any behavior that diminishes another person.
Yes.
I mean, you know what? And, you know, if you think about that as a lens to look at your life, mm-hmm. you know, and you're not even evaluating why it would be wise or not wise, you just say, I won't diminish any person in my sight. And it reminds me of this paragraph of, you know, every time we see somebody as a person, we really are diminishing them right there. The physical body can't possibly enclose who they are.
Right. Yeah. As long as we don't challenge the assumption that comes in sort of like a package deal with our sensory data by our own training, which is to say that you know, this is a person and is limited to just that, the scope of what I, you know, believe about that that perception, then yeah, that means that we're saying I'm selling this other person short and I'm selling myself short. And like you say, but there are, you know, occasionally you find these, you know, examples that really do have a universal ring of truth, Jim, like, you know, the Dalai Lama's, quote of, I believe it's a quote where he says, my religion, I'm going to probably paraphrase it though, my religion is simple, my religion is kindness, you know, and that kindness really is, you know, again, when it's informed by our inner kindness teacher, our the Holy Spirit of A Course in Miracles, or the Jesus of a course, is basically that awareness gives us the opportunity to notice even the most subtle little shadow on the cave of our mind and say, this isn't the real deal. I could see peace instead of this. I can cross the bridge by listening to that guidance and seeing everyone as all of spirit rather than just part of it. And I think we have so many examples. I mean, all you'll have to do is turn on the news or just, you know, just by the very fact of getting up in the morning and doing, going about your everyday stuff, you're going to have countless things that seem to reinforce the idea of, oh, I'm this separate person with separate interests, and they're in contrast and competition to the rest of the world, and it's this vicious, horrible place, and we don't think those things all the time, but that's the kind of the assumption of the ego, that if we don't challenge it, you know, we find inevitably it wears us down, because we need to proactively examine. And that's why, of course, miracles is a challenging curriculum. It says, you know, we need to question every value that we hold, because every value is really an interpretation of a perception. And as long as it's being orchestrated by the ego's interpretation, we're gonna totally miss the boat. We're gonna miss the
point.
Oh yeah.
I mean, and you know, so many things are going through my head right now. But just like that word entanglement. If in a positive way, if we always assume we're always connected to others, that there's more to the picture than we think, then we wouldn't be attracted to simple solutions or to simplified versions of things. Uh-huh. Like, and what I'm thinking of is some of the big issues. Like, in some ways, I'm always amazed when somebody comes out with a really strong opinion on something like, the trade issues, you know, trade between countries, or about whether or not something is good or bad, because I'm like, do you have any idea how complicated this can truly be? You know, I say, oh, don't grow any more corn, you know, but not growing any corn then has all kinds of repercussions on the Midwest families, or the Midwest families are talking about, but corn can be turned into fuel. I mean, you know, I don't think we should just throw up our arms and say we can't possibly understand this. But on the other hand, I mean, I find myself falling prey to this all the time, that I think there is, you know, and I always kind of go back to something I learned when I was working in hospital research, which is something as simple as a curb cut, which sounds like, well, is that just perfect? You know, strollers can go down a curb cut. You know, a walker can go down a curb cut. I mean, this has got to be the answer to disability, right? Curb cuts. But the truth is, curb cuts actually pose a problem to the blind.
Ah, yes.
And, you know, it's like, so
something, thought, yeah, you don't think about it.
You don't think about it. And I'm not saying we get rid of curb cuts.
Right, right.
But we're always anxious to find, the magic pill, you know, the magic pill that is somehow going to solve all the problems. And we believe that somehow that's what the world is like. And yet, maybe there is a magic pill. Like, for instance, a Mr. Rogers saying, I will not participate in anything that's demeaning to anyone. You know, that's probably more of a magic pill than some of these other things that we grab onto and think, oh, well, this is perfect. This solves all the problems, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
The whole universe, as we perceive it as seemingly separate selves, is really ego's panacea. It's solution to a tiny mad idea, isn't it?
Right. Well, yeah. And the idea, and of course, in miracles, I mean, if there's maybe a spiritual absolute, maybe it's we are innocent.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
Could we live our lives saying, I'm innocent and so are you?
Exactly, exactly. And it doesn't mean denying what we think of as factual behavioral data.
Right.
It just means that my interpretation is so limited and everything isn't interconnected, you know, like you're saying. I was thinking of one of the quotes that I've stuck with me over the years is, you can't pluck a flower without troubling a star, you know, because everything's interconnected. You know, there's the butterfly effect and all those kind of things that talk about this huge fractal network of cause and effect. And we tend to grossly oversimplify, you know, the fact that everything is connected to everything else. And we try to say, the cliche is we say, well, this is the cause of that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And yet the irony is that not only in this world does literally everything depend on everything else, not just one factor in isolation, but the effects of this that seem to appear in this world are the effect of a choice in the mind ultimately to believe that somehow we shatter perfect oneness. So that's the ultimate irony and truly humor is that, you know, again, we're like those, you know, seeming slaves in the cave, with manacles on our hands and feet and not happening to notice for a few millennia or whatever that they've been unlocked all this time and oh yeah, you could get up and walk instead of trying to make sense out of the little flickers on the wall.
Right.
From the shadows, yeah.
But, you know, the other thing I want to make sure gets said as we go through this conversation, because we're getting a little close to the end, is it can also then become overwhelming. Oh, my God, well, I can't possibly figure out all of this entanglement. I can't possibly figure out how my vote is going to matter or how this is going to matter. Well, that takes us right back to that's correct. But you can be connected to the source. Exactly. You can be connected to the inner, what you call the inner kindness teacher. At any given moment, in a sense, you can abdicate your need to know everything, and you can simply plug into the source. And you can trust, I am being guided. I am being guided in this moment to whoever and to whatever I need to do or say. I don't have to figure it all out. Exactly. I don't have to, on this level, think that I know all the answers. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. I can simply plug in. You know, because I think that's important, because otherwise I do sometimes just feel overwhelmed. I can't possibly figure this out, so I'm going to sit here and do nothing. I almost feel immobilized. And then it's like, you know what? You don't have to know that. In this moment, you just have to connect to your source.
That's such an important point. Thank you for bringing that up. Because yeah, and you mentioned the elections. It doesn't mean don't vote. It doesn't mean don't brush your teeth. It doesn't mean, you know, do all the normal things that we do, you know, hourly, daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, and so forth, that are just kind of common sense things. It just means do them with a different attitude and do them with the idea that in truth, nothing that we've done in the world is changing the perfect innocence that we all are. But the choices that we make in the world can be a reflection. And we can, and as of course Miracle says, we can be a spotless mirror here. We can reflect the loving kindness that's in our mind by the choices that we make with our behavior. It doesn't mean that the behavior is the choice. It just means, again, like the finger, it points to back to the mind, back to the choice in the mind for one of those two thought systems. And that's mm-hmm. the real value of and that's why, you know, in his course, Jesus says, you know, and this course is within the realm of the ego where it's needed, because obviously in perfect oneness, you know, we don't need, in truth, we don't need anything. But we certainly seem to need a whole lot here in this world, and so that's why it does seem like there's a whole lot of involvement required. And that one of the other study groups and classes I attend on Tuesday and Thursday mornings, Tim Wise was doing a little research on all of the occurrences of the word "must" in A Course in Miracles, and he says there's hundreds of them. And again, I was thinking, well, the bridge really is basically the musts, not in any kind of obligatory or you know, compromise. There's no sacrifice involved, but the must is kind of like I'm flashing back to an audio recording of Richard Bach that I heard years ago. He says, as long as you don't want to fly, you don't have to know about the laws of aerodynamics. You don't have to care about wind speed and true altitude and you know, vectors and all, you know, there's none of that ground school or flight training that you need to know, because I got a pilot's license years ago and haven't done anything with it since. But you know, there's a lot of stuff you need to know in order to get your pilot's license.
Right.
Well, the same thing is true with learning to navigate your mind and to not fall out of the sky, so to speak, metaphorically. Once you say, I want to learn this, I want to be free of the you know, the gravity or the bondage of the world, then there are an enormous set of musts. There are an enormous set of things that are required in that bridge, but we're given every single thing we need moment to moment to moment through that inner guidance, through the Holy Spirit, through the awareness that asks, is this a kind decision? Is this am I at peace right now? And if we're right. not, then we say, okay, I need to hand this over again, once again, to Holy Spirit, and let that awareness within me, that inner strength, that inner integrity, that inner sense of gentle strength to speak through us rather than from us.
Right.
And act through us rather than from us.
Yeah. And as we get close to, I mean, we have about 4 minutes to close the show, but I do want to read one more paragraph
out of this section.
Uh-huh. And it's paragraph 7 for those of you who are following. Uh-huh. The bridge itself is nothing more than a transition in the perspective of reality. On this side, everything you see is grossly distorted and completely out of perspective. What is little and insignificant is magnified, and what is strong and powerful cut down to littleness. In the transition, there is a period of confusion in which a sense of actual disorientation may occur. But fear it not, for it means only that you have been willing to let go of your hold on the distorted frame of reference that seemed to hold your world together. And I love that because, mm-hmm. once again, we can get overwhelmed, we can get confused when we're willing to challenge our belief systems about the way life works. Well, it's going to be a little disorienting, but that's okay because that's what needs to happen in order to see something different, in order to see it a little bit differently.
Exactly. And the next sentence really highlights where most of our work is this frame of reference is built around the special relationship. Without this illusion, there could be no meaning you would still seek here. So basically, right. we're all trying to build a bridge from one illusion to another, thinking that's going to make us happy. But in A Course in Miracles, the idea is metaphorically to build a vertical bridge up to that decision-making place in our mind, and recognize that it's that bridge has been there all the time. We just have to accept the hand that's coming down from Holy Spirit and grab on and say, hey, let me lift you up here. And then you'll see that is the transition in the perspective of reality. And we recognize that nothing in the illusory world is going to make us happy. But we can reflect that choice here in our thoughts and words and actions and behavior as a result of participating in Holy Spirit's bridge, which is all about forgiveness and looking at our special relationships and letting go of thinking that there's something that we need to get from the world or specific people and not that we change what we do with our careers or our families or whatever, but we just change, look at the why and learn to not condemn. And then we become more and more kind as time goes on. And that's really the transformation that's happening in the mind that's reflected in behavior. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Bruce, thank you so much for coming today. And also thank you so much for this suggestion.
Oh,
this
sure.
has been a fun topic. And as always, it's been provocative. Do you want to make a quick announcement before we close the show today?
I think the main thing is if people are interested in Jackie Laura Jones' book, I put a link to that on ACM blog, and I highly recommend it. And we'll have updates soon on the Miracle Share Conference, which I think is still scheduled for January, but I haven't talked to the folks organizing that lately. You can always reach me at ACIM blog, and I always appreciate our conversations and everyone listening. So thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. And by the way, for those of you who are in the chat room or maybe later today, or you can go back and check another time, Bruce Rawls, I put a link to it, but it's www.acimblog.com. So everybody, thank you so much for being here, to the listeners and everybody in the chat room, and to Scott Weaver, who is our producer today. And I hope that you will stay tuned, because up next is one of our newest shows here on 1-2 Radio, which is Multidimensional Living with KDB. And in the next few weeks, we're also going to have another show starting with one of our new advisors, Aubrey. So stay tuned. Fridays are happening places here on 1-2 Radio. So I hope you have a great week. Until then, relax and wear loose clothes. You have been listening to the Friday Morning Show with C.A. Brooks and my guest, Bruce Rawls, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality.
It is a giving of peace in your mind to stranger to a friend.